Word of mouth.
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 From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Human beings have long worked to cheat death, but few efforts have been as ambitious or speculative or optimistic as the nearly 50-year-old field of cryonics. The scientific pursuit of preserving human bodies at sub-zero temperatures was once regarded with public disgust, but is now gaining traction. Where else? In Silicon Valley. Our guest is Josh Dean, author of Show Dog and contributor to BuzzFeed, where his long-form article, Inside the Immortality Business, was featured. Josh, great to have you back on Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me.
The first body was frozen in 1967. At that time, the process did have this ring of science fiction. So what has happened in the ensuing decades?
Well, cryonics has had a bit of a stop and start history. It's one of those things that I think everyone's heard about, and then it comes up in conversation. They're like, oh, wait, they're still doing that? It was sort of launched with great hype because it seemed like this crazy idea in the 60s, and it's still a crazy idea today. There were some PR disasters and lack of funding that kind of dragged on for decades, and it became this very marginalized thing that really never stopped, though. What's changed, I guess, and I hate to give too much momentum to it, but that there has been some legitimate science in some of the spaces and some new thinking to solve a few of the problems that cryonics has always had, especially that when you freeze something, you cause damage to the cells. I mean, this is kind of the fundamental problem of cryonics, is that when you freeze something, there is damage. So when you do thaw it someday, what's going to be left? We don't really know.
So how has the process of freezing changed since those early days?
The biggest change actually happened in the 90s when what's called a cryoprotectant was developed. And basically, instead of doing a freeze, what they do is they now cycle out your blood and replace the water in the body's cells with a chemical that essentially glassifies the tissue. So it's called vitrification. Now, this is not perfect either. It's believed that this causes a different kind of damage. It's basically been decided that this is the way to do it, and that maybe the damage that's being done is insignificant enough that they'll be able to fix it anyway once they figure out how to thaw people. Mm-hmm. I mean, because here's the big problem is that it's never been done. So we're freezing people with the hopes that someday we'll be able to thaw them and revive them. We don't know that this will happen.
Well, one place that seems to believe in this idea that anything is possible is the Alcor Life Extension Foundation. This is in Scottsdale, Arizona, a giant in the world of cryonics. First of all, you mentioned the bad press. Is this not the place where Ted Williams' head was abused?
It is the place where Ted Williams now resides, or Ted Williams' head now resides. It turned out, actually, that a lot of what was alleged that it was mistreated and that it was allowed to, I don't know if it thaw, but to warm. And that was actually went to court. And the person who told that story, who was a disgruntled former employee, was forced to recant. And I believe there may have even been a financial settlement. Basically, Alcor was awarded a judgment that said, like, that was slanderous. Ted Williams was treated well in the sense that anyone there whose head is removed and frozen is treated well. So in that context, whether you believe that removing someone's head and putting it in a crock pot that's then placed into a freezer is treating someone well, I think that's an individual judgment.
You sound like a little bit of a doubter there, Josh.
You know, I'm less of a doubter now than I was when I started reporting it. I think I was like a lot of people thought this was crazy, but there's some very smart people involved, and I don't completely write it off. I should also say, as an aside, I'm not even sure I'm smart enough to completely understand some of the things they're talking about, because the removal of the head has to do with the idea that once we're lab-grown organs, which is kind of already happening, that eventually we'll be able to grow new bodies and you could put the head on a new, younger body. But really the more out there belief, and this is where a lot of these people are going, is that none of that's going to matter, because what we're ultimately going to do is just download the information in your brain that makes you you. Like, your personality is not your body or your heart or even your physical brain. It's the electrical activity that exists in your brain cells. So a lot of very smart people that I spoke to, including, you know, credible scientists in fields that are not cryonics, believe that it's only a matter of time until we've mapped the brain to a degree that we can access that information. In that sense, removing the head makes sense, because you're not going to need your body anyway.
And actually, at Alcor, it costs less for just a neuro, which I guess is a head-only preservation, right?
I think it's $80,000 instead of $200,000. That price is considered to be fair. I think the what the president of Alcor told me, Max Moore, is that he feels like they've underpriced the full body treatment because the body takes up a lot more space in the freezers. And the freezers, I should say, are these like thermos bottles, giant thermos bottles. They're not hooked up to electricity. They're just filled with dry ice. So it's actually, you know, not dependent on electricity, or it's a relatively low cost once someone has been vitrified and frozen. They just kind of live in a thermos forever. So you can imagine a head takes up a lot less space. They can store a lot more. It actually doesn't cost that much to store for a long time.
How does this work? Do people just pay up front for something like this?
There's a fee to join, which is small, and then there's an annual fee, which is also relatively small. And then the big payment is a bulk payment at death. You basically make Alcor the beneficiary of your life insurance policy. So this is a conversation you need to have with your spouse and your children and say, like, listen, I'm not going to be leaving you money. I'm going to give my money to Alcor so that they can freeze me.
When you were visiting Alcor, there was an intake, a 90-year-old nightclub owner from Las Vegas. We mentioned Ted Williams. Larry King has said he would like to be cryonically preserved. I know you were looking at the science, but is there a certain type of person who tends to wish to be preserved in this manner?
Yes. I mean, I think it's fair to say maverick personalities, people who got interested in this were generically we call futurists, and kind of the same people who are interested in the early days of the space program and who would like voluntarily say, I would jump on a rocket ship to Mars even though I know I'm not coming back. You know, there's a portion of the membership that is just kind of super technologists. But then beyond that, I think there's a real, I mean, if you talk about Larry King and Seth MacFarlane and Simon Cowell and even some of the futurists, the more prominent personalities like Ray Kurzweil and Marvin Minsky and some of these people, you know, I think a healthy ego is probably a factor. you kind of need to believe that the world is worse off without you and you need to be around, or that your life is so great and you don't want to give it up. I mean, these are wealthy people, you know, generically speaking. Male, I think, I don't know the exact breakdown, but it's definitely more male than female. And Alcor keeps portraits on the wall. So when you walk around the lobby and the halls, you can see the faces of all the people in there, and definitely skews male.
The writer Josh Dean is with us. He's a contributor to BuzzFeed, among other places, where he got a glimpse inside the immortality business and wrote about it. We're talking about cryonics and how that field has changed. I don't know. I mean, I think of seeing the portraits of the people who are in there and then thinking of their frozen heads or bodies in there, it strikes me as a little macabre. But in Russia, I guess popular opinion of cryonics is far more positive. So tell us a little bit about the industry there.
Well, Russia has a much younger cryonics industry. And I mean, I use the term industry, but we're talking about a very small industry here, whether it's the U.S. or Russia. But Russia doesn't have the history that American cryonics had. And I mean, I referenced it. I didn't really explain it. But there was a very famous event that happened here in the U.S. called the Chatsworth Incident. Basically, one of the early forefathers of cryonics who was involved in freezing the first man, was Robert Nelson, was very passionately fighting the fight for cryonics, but he didn't have a lot of money. So he would basically freezing people, putting them in containers, but it was like duct tape and paper clips. He just didn't have the money to keep it going. And eventually what happened is he allowed those bodies to thaw, and it became a huge controversy. It made the national press. He was shamed. The industry was shamed. It was a more nuanced story than that. But anyway, that did fundamental damage to reputation of cryonics. Russia's basically saying, we don't have that history. We believe in some of the technology. We can start over, and the public will embrace us. And the most interesting thing is that there's actually legislation that's been proposed, and I don't know when we'll go up for vote, but seriously being considered, that would separate cryonics from funeral practices, which is how it's considered here as basically an elaborate funeral practice, so that hospitals and medical facilities could actually assist in the cryonic freezing of people. And this is important because really, if you were going to do this right, you would do it just before death, before the heart stopped. So if Russia was able to do this, they could then exactly control the conditions at which someone were frozen, and that would be important. So that's probably never going to happen here. Or I can't say never will happen here, but it's hard to believe that at this point you could get lawmakers to even consider such a thing.
You bring up a couple of things, of course, the legal aspects of these proceedings. I mean, how liable would Alcor be for reanimation mistakes in the future? I mean, if they don't do it right, nobody's really going to be able to sue them, are they?
Right. No, and I think I haven't seen the contract that you sign with them. I have to imagine it accounts for the fact that, you know, what we're offering you is something we don't even know if we can do. And everyone there will be very upfront about this. Like, we hope we can do it someday. It hasn't been done. We don't know that we'll be able to do it. As they will always say, cryonics is the second worst thing that can happen to you, right? The alternative is dying. And if you die, well, you're dead. So we're offering you a chance here. And this is what they will keep telling you. One of the interesting things I turned up when I was talking to some of these scientists, where it's not really just about cryonics. I mean, there's a very real and interesting application for being able to freeze and thaw sophisticated or more advanced collection of tissue, like mm-hmm. organs, for mm-hmm. instance. Like,
for
if you can imagine a frozen bank of organs, mm-hmm. like, we would save thousands of lives a year that are lost because people are waiting for kidneys or hearts or livers. Unfortunately, one of the things that happened when the reputation of cryonics was ruined is that the science and the money dried up. The cryobiology community, which is the larger community of scientists who study low temperature biology, and there's a lot of that that goes on in various fields, really don't even want to associate themselves with cryonics. Like, there's a guy on the board who works for a company called 21st Century Medicine, and he developed the cryoprotectant. A lot of what he does is work on things like organ freezing. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't even talk to me. Even though he's on the board, he developed the cryoprotectant. He just said, basically, I have nothing to gain from being associated with cryonics, because as soon as he does and he goes to a conference, people are like, oh yeah, you're the weirdo who, like, freezes people.
Josh Dean, an author and contributor to BuzzFeed, where his article Inside the Immortality Business was featured earlier this month. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's always fun.
You'll find a link to read it at wordofmouthradio.org. And while you're there, let us know what you think. Is a second chance at life, even a very small one, worth the money? Or do you think the pursuit of immortality is a hopeless and expensive affair? Post your comments on our website or on our Facebook page, Word of Mouth Radio. Coming up, online poker is now legal in some states. Can it draw in the millions of social media gamers who got hooked betting with fake money? We'll hear more when Word of Mouth continues.